KALW.
Here's the thing about the federal acknowledgement process that people don't understand, is that process is only for tribes that were never acknowledged by the federal government.
Today, the challenges Native tribes face when they apply for federal recognition.
By the strength and resilience of our ancestors, we've been able to stay together without a land base.
The struggle to prove who you are, and with it, the land that was promised years ago. Then we talk to Oakland muralist Rachel Wolf Goldsmith about how she turns large blank walls into art that tells a story.
What if I can tell the story of transition through layers of oneself?
And Oakland author Mac Barnett reads from his new children's book. That's coming up. I'm Hanat Baba, and this is Cross Currents. Today, we're starting with a story from our project, Hey Area, where you ask the questions and our reporters find the answers. KALW listener Isabella Tilley wanted to know, why do none of the Bay Area Native tribes have federal recognition? KALW's Johanna Miyake went to find out.
In the Bay Area, some tribes do have federal recognition. Seven tribes in Sonoma and Marin counties are recognized by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, or the BIA. But the answer to Isabella's question is complicated, in part because when the BIA began identifying homeless Indians in California in 1905, they often renamed and reorganized tribes, often using names that had no meaning to them.
They named us Verona Band after a railroad station, but that wasn't our name.
That was tribal councilwoman of the Muwekma Ohlone tribe of the San Francisco Bay Area, Charlene Nijme. She says tribes don't need federal recognition to exist, but recognition identifies them as a social political group that predates California becoming a state and therefore eligible for federal status.
We were first acknowledged as a social political community in 1906.
The tribal councilwoman says federal recognition helps tribes to establish infrastructure, including getting land. In 1906, the BIA created a list of federally recognized tribes in California.
And they found a specific community in Alameda County, Pleasanton and Niles, these two groups. We were the same people. We were families living very close to each other. So that's how we were first acknowledged.
What happened to the Muwekma Ohlone is common. According to the most recent census data, California is home to more Native people than any other state in the country. Today, there are more than 200 Native tribes in California. Statewide, just over half of these tribes are federally recognized. And some California Native tribes have started coming together to support each other and honor their ancestors, their shared culture, and history. In the spring, the Muwekma Ohlone joined tribes from across the Golden State for the first annual Cali Native Night in San Jose, a celebration of and for California indigenous people. Charlene Nijme began the night with a land acknowledgement.
On behalf of our people, Muwekma La Gente, we would like to offer an official welcoming to our ancestral homeland.
With help from a neighboring Bay Area tribe, the Muwekma Ohlone performed publicly for the first time in 125 years at Cali Native Night.
Our Indian people, they say, ho!
That's what I'm talking about.
Some Bay Area tribes received land from the government along with federal recognition. The Muwekma Ohlone were promised land too. But in 1927, a controversial BIA agent submitted a report to Congress that said they no longer needed land.
What the BIA has said is that we have stopped being a social political community, which is not the case.
Charlene Nijme says the Muwekma Ohlone Indians do exist, and they still need the land they were promised. They have proof of more than 550 active members still living in the Bay Area today. That's 550 Bay Area residents who can trace their lineage back to the same federally recognized tribe that the BIA renamed the Verona Band.
Here's the thing about the federal acknowledgement process that people don't understand, is that process is only for tribes that were never acknowledged by the federal government. The government never identified them. We were already identified.
A federal court acknowledged the United States had recognized Mohawk Ohlone as an Indian tribe, but the BIA says that the Mohawk Ohlone have not shown they have been continuously active as a tribe since 1900. Charlene Nijme says they never stopped being a tribe.
By, you know, the strength and resilience of our ancestors and our great-grandmothers and our grandmothers is that we've been able to stay together without a land base.
The Mohawk Ohlone are still trying to prove they exist, well over a century after they had already been federally recognized. And they are just one of many tribes still fighting for their ancestral land.
We're still a landless tribe and are all still together.
San Francisco State University journalism professor Dr. Christina Azakar wrote the book News Media and the Indigenous Fight for Federal Recognition. She says there are serious misconceptions about federal recognition.
Tribes do not seek federal recognition to open casinos. Tribes do it to exert their rights of sovereignty with the federal government.
Dr. Azakar is talking about the powers, privileges, and immunities that come with federal acknowledgement.
Federal recognition doesn't mean benefits. It means that tribes have the right to govern themselves, provide for their people with services such as healthcare, education, and cultural revitalization.
California natives can be traced back to 740 AD on land that is now the San Francisco Bay Area. Today, many of their descendants still live throughout the region and belong to organized tribal groups. But without federal recognition, they cannot govern themselves as sovereign nations. This means they're subject to the laws of the states they live in. Without recognition, tribes don't get the health, housing, and education services as native tribes with federal status. It also leaves them landless, without control of their own cultural artifacts and ancestral remains.
There are two main ways that tribes get federal recognition. The first is through what's called the Federal Acknowledgement Process, or FAP, and this requires tribes to collect a lot of information, and it usually means hiring historians, anthropologists, and other people with expertise in gathering historical information.
Dr. Azakar says tribes can also get federal recognition through the legislative process, like an act of Congress. They both have the same challenges of providing endless documentation that often no longer exists. Dr. Azakar is Native herself and says her tribe ran into similar challenges when they sought federal recognition.
So we couldn't produce the required historical records to prove that we were actually Indian. This act of paper genocide reclassified all Indians as either Negro or white.
Another way many Native Americans lost proof of their Native identity is through racially biased laws. Some states reclassified everyone as either white, colored, or mixed, making it difficult for descendants to prove their Native ancestry. Native leaders call these bureaucratic obstacles paper genocide, a form of erasure on paper. For Native tribes seeking federal recognition, obtaining the right paperwork is only one part of the daunting process.
The main challenges tribes face for federal recognition are the funds to do it and the opposition of surrounding communities. It costs a lot of money to pay for the experts needed to gather documentation. And even the legislative process requires paying lobbyists.
The process is so costly and so complex, many tribes don't even try. Charlene Nijme says the fight doesn't end there. They have to fight to preserve their culture, too.
I feel, honestly, that's what we face is this politics of erasure, is they did not want us around.
California Native tribes have been coming together to make their presence known and visible with public events like Cali Native Night and campaigns on college campuses. As public attitudes start to change, there's hope that their calls for federal recognition will be heard. Thanks for asking this important question, Isabella. To learn more about issues facing Native people of California, please visit kalw.org and search for this story under Hay Area. In San Francisco, I'm Johanna Miyake for Cross Currents.
Johanna is a fellow in our Audio Academy training program, and that story is part of our collaborative reporting project, Hey Area. You can find more stories like it and ask your own question about the Bay Area at klw.org/heyarea. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. When COVID shut everything down back in 2020, artists went to downtown Oakland and painted murals on boarded-up businesses. Some murals expressed rage and sadness over social justice issues, like police killings of Black people. Others celebrated the beauty of the city's diversity. A new book documents some of the city's most profound murals. It's called Painting the Streets: Oakland Uprising in the Time of Rebellion. The cover art is by Rachel Wolf Goldsmith. Her large murals are inspired by Afrofuturism, liberation, and abstract surrealism. KALW's Janae Darden spoke with Rachel about her murals and the book.
Rachel, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me. How you doing?
I'm good. Your art is just, I can't put it into words, just how spectacular and beautiful your art is. It's so nice to see it around Oakland. Rachel, what made you want to pick up that paintbrush?
I can show you definitely pictures of me in diapers covered in paint from head to toe. that's been the like consistent, always done it, always gonna do it thing in my life. Yeah.
Did that paint get on the wall at your parents' house?
Definitely. Definitely. My parents were cool. I was very lucky that they were down for me to express myself. And throughout middle school and like more so in high school, I remember my whole room was just murals, like head to toe, every wall.
That's amazing. I was watching a video where you talked about how murals, you know, painting murals can be dangerous. And how so?
It is just very physically demanding. Like even the last mural we were on, I was doing a mural with the Bay Area Mural Program on the YMCA downtown. And that's like a 9 stories. We had to have a swing stage. So you get all this construction rigging put up and then you got to use safety harnesses and, you know how to deal with, challenges as they arise. But like, you know, for instance, on a swing stage, you're hanging from the edge of the building, you know, and when you're on like a boom lift or a scissor lift, there's just kind of all of the things that go along with being a construction worker that are kind of at play.
You know, your mural in honor of the women of the Black Panther Party just has people in Oakland are just in awe. Or just people just around the Bay who have seen it are in awe. What was that experience like to create that, that beautiful mural in West Oakland?
Oh man, that was definitely one of my favorite projects I've worked on. And it's across the street from where Huey was killed. It is an extremely historical neighborhood and a lot of the people who live there have lived there for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. In the process of being there and painting, I felt like I was just soaking in all of this knowledge and history and like neighbors coming by and telling stories. And, you know, one of my favorite moments was like working on the main wall and somebody pulled up and was like, oh, nice work, whatever. And he was like, that really looks like my auntie. And I was like, it actually might be your aunt because, you know, all these photos, they don't have names attached to them. So we've been trying to figure out who these people are. If this is your auntie, like, we'd love to know that. Send her a picture. You know, I showed him the reference image and he was like, that's definitely her. Like,
oh,
cool.
Wow.
And so she's holding a sign and he was like, well, what's her sign going to say? I was like, man, go ask her. Call her up. Ask her what her sign should say, come back, let me know, I'll put it on. And that happened, you know, and then there would be like, I don't know, somebody from the neighborhood would come up and be like, hey, you know, I was a Black Panther and I don't really want my whole name up on the wall, but will you put my name like real small up in the corner? Just my first name. I'd be like, yeah. but yeah, like, I mean, so there's 300 plus names and that's a list that is open. Like we left room on the house for that list to grow as people discover the mural and identify themselves and ask to be put on the wall. So it's been evolving as well.
Yeah. Painting the Streets is a book that features Oakland murals created in 2020, addressing police brutality of Black folks and addressing institutionalized racism. And one of your works, Our Movement, is the cover art. And it has so much energy. It has so much energy.
Yes.
Talk about that piece. I love that piece.
I've been working with dancers for a while, like taking a video of a dancer and breaking it into like moments and kind of creating this flow with it. But I had this realization of like, oh, wow, what if this tells a deeper, like, what if I can tell the story of transition through time or transition through layers of oneself? And so the woman is transitioning from this modern day woman into her ancestral clothing. And you could perceive that as like, going back to ancestral roots in the past, you could perceive that as just another aspect of who she is and her embodiment as a Black woman. And then she's just larger than life, you know? So I feel like there's this beautiful thing about making people look up to Black women or up to Black people, right, where you have to stand and raise your head and be kind of in reverence, right? And just like be overwhelmed by it.
And so were you painting that during the protest?
Yeah.
Like right when the protests were happening, you were out there. So you're hearing the sirens and the chanting and all of that, seeing the tear gas.
Yeah.
What was that like for you to be a muralist?
Yeah, I mean, whew. I was waking up pretty much every day, like, crying and out of sorts and going to that mural and working until I was okay. Honestly, like it was very emotional. It was also very powerful. I feel like myself, along with my whole community of artists, like we were called upon in that time. Like we were all, you know, we were all being sought after. We were being sought after because we were Black artists, right? Because everybody was trying to jump on the diversity train and say, oh, look what we're doing. And then we were also being sought after by community organizations and by, you know, by local people who wanted to bring attention to things, by people who wanted to honor people and get messages out. And it was this like full on, you know, very powerful, emotional, and just like high energy in pretty much every kind of way, time.
So you have so much work that you've done, and I know you haven't been doing this for a long time, but you still have so much work. What has been the greatest compliment of your work? What has been the compliment or feedback that you most cherish?
I mean, when I was working on the Black Panther mural, I had multiple people come up and just express how proud they were to be Black when they see that, and how happy they were to see their history massive and undeniable and unapologetic on this giant wall. So I think the biggest compliment for me is really just like seeing how much of an impact public art really does have and how much murals really validate people's truths and make them feel like they belong where they're at. Yeah.
That was muralist Rachel Wolf Goldsmith speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. You can see her art in the book Painting the Streets, Oakland Uprising in the Time of Rebellion.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. Next, we'll hear about another book, this one about the abstract ways we try to capture the complexities of love. It's another author reading from KALW's literary podcast, New Arrivals.
This is New Arrivals, a pocket-sized book tour with Bay Area authors. I'm Lisa Morehouse. Mac Barnett lives in Oakland. His book, What is Love? With illustrations by Carson Ellis, came out in December of 2021.
It's a picture book about love and the different things that love means to different people and how a feeling is really hard to put into words. I'll read you a little bit from it. I asked the fisherman, "What is love?" The fisherman smiled. "Love is a fish." "A fish," I said. "It glimmers and splashes, just out of reach. And the day that you catch it, if you know what you're doing, you give it a kiss and throw it back in the sea. But I don't like fish," I said. "They're slimy and taste bad, and they have creepy eyes." The fisherman sighed. "You do not understand."
That was Mac Barnett reading from What is Love?
New Arrivals is produced by Lisa Morehouse, and you can hear more authors reading from their new books at kalw.org/newarrivals. And before we leave you, here's some new music from a local artist. This is San Francisco band Memphis Rains and their newly released album, Rain Clouds. You see a song, you boost some, my crew run. Through that look at 365, been doing this before, exhibit dip, hit my rock. Got $12 shots, snuck the fifth inside. It's true. Look easy like we run in the scrimmage. Hit the bars, they all dies like the Summer Olympics. Now one for the gimmicks. This ride is air rapper. Hit the stage, front page, rock shows, Def Leppard. The steak's peppered, top with the garlic butter. Whiskey in the tea, that's a Charlotte summer. Y'all are bummers, get from us. Waking up screaming for all. Today's Cross Currents team includes Hanisha Harjani, Sydney Fishman, Aaron Kopp, Elizabeth Aranda, James Rowlands, Gabe Graben, Victor Tense, Shadeen Adil, Shia Levitt, Sunni Khalid, and Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet as interpreted by Daoud Anthony. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba. Stay out of my state, see me pulling your permission, slipping it over, don't say it right.